What's up, everybody? Wednesday morning edition NHL Fantasy on Ice. Just Pete Jensen and Rob Reese here today with you, talking fantasy and sports betting, a little DFS for the Wednesday slate. And then we're inside a week before the trade deadline, so a lot to get to in terms of players you can target before potential moves. What's up, Robbie?
What's up, Petey? And yeah, we might as well start off with the big one on the list, which is Taylor Hall. He was held out as a precautionary measure for the Buffalo Sabres on Tuesday evening. Now, Hall, Pete, is an interesting one. We've gotten some questions on Twitter, like, is he worth a stash? I think the short answer is yes, but what do you think?
Well, I mean, the production this year has been underwhelming, to say the least, right? 19 points in 37 games, only 6 on the power play. The shot volume is pretty high, what you would expect from Taylor Hall, but the plus minus, of course, is a disaster, like has been for the Buffalo Sabres for the entire season across the board. No matter how good you are on that team, that you've been down in the dumps in that category. So was Taylor Hall expected of elite production this year? I think, yes, he was, right? We were saying you could go out there and stack him with Eichel. Of course, Kruger didn't play them together, so that didn't really work out too well for Taylor Hall this year. Of course, the Buffalo experiment in general, this kind of one-year bet on yourself thing, has been a disaster, to be frank. But yeah, Taylor Hall can still go to a contending team, whether it's the Boston Bruins, who need secondary scoring, the New York Islanders, who with Anders Lee out for the season, need a top line left wing. There are other teams out there that could use the services of Taylor Hall. You're probably not going to get MVP caliber Taylor Hall from 3 seasons ago, but you might get something in the middle here, and that might be enough for a contender to put them over the top. So yes, I would stash Taylor Hall in fantasy here and now. And same goes for like Kyle Palmieri, right, Robbie?
Absolutely. I think Palmieri is an interesting one. I do want to react on Hall. I guess the only concern I have, Pete, is that his goal totals have been pretty average the last 3 or 4 seasons now. You know, I mean, if you're looking for a comparison, if he does move at the deadline, I mean, like, look what he did with Arizona, 27 points in 35 games, only had 10 goals there. And that half season, you know, with New Jersey, the same year, 2019-20, he had 6 goals in 30 games. And now this year with Buffalo, 2 goals in 37 games. Like, that's not cutting it. And I think it's like we kind of pick him, you know, with the team like the Islanders, who do need some goal scoring help, but he's not really a goal scorer anymore, right? So it's like, I don't know if I love that. I mean, it's definitely exciting. It'd be good for the Islanders, who are a legitimate Stanley Cup contender, but I'm just a little bit worried. His ceiling just isn't what it used to be. And, you know, while he could, you know, rack up some assists, that's great, but I'm just not sure that I'm that intrigued by it. I do think Kyle Palmieri, who you alluded to, is a little bit more intriguing to me. Not only, you know, is he less rostered in Yahoo, but I think the fit there, Pete, he would go onto a power play 1 unit and he can score at will on the power play. And I just feel better about that, at least in terms of fantasy return value.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Taylor Hall has had 30-plus goals once in his career. Same for Palmieri, but Palmieri's been like 24, 25, 26, 27, 30. Taylor Hall has been 39 for his pinnacle, which was during the MVP season. And also power play points-wise, his pinnacle was extremely high with 37, but then it really drops off. Like, it dropped down to 21, and Taylor Hall has only had 20-plus power play points 2 times in his long career, whereas Kyle Palmieri on the power play, I mean, you know, in terms of power play goals, he's had 3 different seasons of 11 power play goals. So 4 different seasons of double digit, 4 different seasons of 11 power play goals. And, you know, he's gotten over 20 twice. So yeah, you can make the argument for sure that Palmieri has been a better goal scorer, a more consistent goal scorer, a more consistent power play goal scorer, and a more consistent power play point producer than Taylor Hall has been, even though Taylor Hall always gets, you know, the hype and stuff like that, and he's bounced around the league a little bit. But what you brought up about the goal total, right? We thought that goal total in Arizona last year was a little shaky. I mean, only 2 this year in about the same number of games comparing those 2 sample sizes. So yeah, definitely on a downward trend. And, you know, for the better part of Hall's career, he's been on like bottom feeder non-contending teams, which is like the narrative that continues to follow him. So, you know, could a team pick him up at the deadline and, you know, the Sabres retain some of his 1 year contract salary and maybe they throw in a pick or two and they get the services of Taylor Hall, that could work out really well for a contending team. So definitely bounce back appeal for both of these guys. But one thing to remember, right, like with any potential quarantines and stuff like that, like the trade deadline fantasy wise, don't get your expectations too high. Don't make any crazy moves to drop proven players just to stash a Hall who might only play a couple of games for you when it's all said and done after he's traded.
It's true. And I'm not sure how many suitors there are for either player this year either. I mean, you have to look at the standings right now. I mean, Chicago won a beautiful game against Dallas, which was very impressive, but you know, they're barely hanging around with 41 points, two behind the Nashville Predators. Columbus, 38 points, they're in it too, but it's not really enough to call them, you know, a buyer at the deadline. In fact, I think it would be wise to even sell if you were a couple of those teams. And then you kind of turn it out west and you look at Minnesota, who his power play is terrible, second worst in the league, only to that of the Anaheim Ducks. So I would say, you know, maybe Minnesota is another landing spot for a Palmieri where the power play would just be electric. You know, even strength would be interesting too, Pete, but you know, I'm just not as high on the fantasy spins at the trade deadline this year as I kind of have been in the past. I don't get as excited thinking about it. And it's not because, you know, that these aren't good players. I'm just not picturing the perfect fit for either one of them. And it's unfortunate, too, that Taylor Hall, you know, we thought when he signed with the Sabres, like that him and Jack Eichel were going to form this duo. It would have led to a long-term contract for Taylor Hall with the Buffalo Sabres. And none of that happened. I mean, he played with Eichel pretty infrequently. You know, that was ruined right away. And, you know, now we're in a position where it's, you know, a former number one overall pick, and we're not even that excited about him getting shopped at the deadline.
I'm actually more excited about some of the other guys on the Sabres if they were to get traded, if like a Sam Reinhart was traded or if a Ristolainen was traded to be a top pair or even second pair defenseman on a good team. I've always wanted to see that kind of untapped potential with a better supporting cast around him. Of course, Ullmark, since he's come back, has been magnificent. I mean, you should go out there and pick up Ullmark, even though he plays for the Sabres, in case of a potential trade, but he's also returning value. The Sabres got a little nice point streak going, right? And another win yesterday. So their days of the streak for the wrong reasons are long gone, and they're returning some value here. Of course, they're going to keep probably Eichel, right? Because they would just be better off trading him in the offseason if they even go that route. They're going to keep like Mittelstadt, who's been a nice little late season storyline here with a 4-game point streak. But yeah, I think like I'm excited to see some of those other players more so than Taylor Hall and where they're going to go if they are traded. So yeah, the Buffalo Sabres this year, because they've been such a big disappointment, but I actually think they have the talent. They shouldn't have been this bad. I keep thinking that, especially now that they're playing a little bit better with Ullmark back in the picture. They shouldn't have been this bad. So the Sabres have a lot of talent to offer at the deadline that could move and shake. And don't be surprised if, again, a Buffalo Sabres hoisting the Stanley Cup at the end of the year, like quite like Ryan O'Reilly that 1 year.
They should at least be, you know, where New Jersey is in the standings, at least be competitive in games against Philadelphia, in games against the Rangers. Like that should be their comparable for at least competition's sake. Unfortunately, we did not see that. I agree with you about Ullmark, though. You can do a whole lot worse on the waiver wire in fantasy. I mean, I think last night, you know, Tuesday night was a perfect example of that with the Anaheim Ducks upsetting the Sharks 5-1. Gibson makes 34 saves. And then you look at your, you know, fantasy team. If you had Martin Jones out there, got shelled with an 8.79 save percentage. And you're like, what happened? You know, Martin Jones was on fire, you know, rock star on the waiver wire, and then gets blown out by the Anaheim Ducks out of all opponents. And that is the perfect example of how frustrating that position has been in fantasy this season.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the books have lost a lot of money on the Sharks the past couple of weeks with like how they've been underdogs and winning some of these games. And then I saw yesterday they were like -190 favorites. And of course they, you know, they stink up the place and stuff like that. And some of the effort problems come back and rear their ugly head. The third goal for Anaheim was really ugly. It was like two giveaways on the play, and then Martin Jones was out of position. So that was just, and Burns was on the ice. It was really ugly for that play. And that was right after the Sharks scored a power play goal. So that was like the balloon popped on the game for them. But yeah, the fact that they lost that game and what Getzlaff wasn't playing, Raquel wasn't playing, Trevor Zegras is down in the AHL. I mean, that was that's a rude awakening reality check for sure. And the Coyotes are playing really well these days. So we'll see if they keep things going. But yeah, things change very quickly, right, Robbie? You wake up the next morning and you start to, you know, rethink your fantasy team and all the decisions you made the day prior. Happens all the time.
Petey, I know it too well this season, especially. Now, I would say, you know, another reaction off last night is Boston winning 4-2 over the Flyers, which was impressive. You know, Flyers tied that thing up in the second period. Two quick goals for them, but then Marchand and Bergeron on the top line struck again in the third. Now, the reason I bring this up is I think that is a perfect destination for a player like Kyle Palmieri, Pete, who it's so evident that the Bruins need help beyond that top line. You know, their moves in the past have been 1 foot in, 1 foot out, but getting a Kyle Palmieri is 2 feet in all the way with an electric player that could really help them, not only at even strength, but they could put him as a power play wrinkle too. I mean, we saw last night, Charlie McAvoy missed the game. That's certainly not good. You know, still got the victory, but that guy, he logs 26, 27 minutes every single night. So, you know, if they're going to start dropping a little bit or they've got some guys banged up, Palmieri makes a lot of sense to help that team, not only at even strength, but on special teams as well.
For sure. And I think we've seen, you know, Tuukka Rask is nearing a return. He's not quite ready yet from what we've heard. And then Rask was on the protocol list. So they're one of those other teams that's on a third string goalie with Dan Vladar. So maybe some streaming appeal here if he gets another start later in the week. He's been decent, no doubt about it. So, and then, yeah, we were talking about Craig Smith the other day, and I still like the player, but there's no question about it. Like, Kyle Palmieri is a better player than Craig Smith. Even if Kyle Palmieri was on second or third line, he would probably be on first power play. And that would just make that Bruins, you know, outlook on the man advantage just so much more lethal than it already is. So yeah, that makes a ton of sense for sure. I kind of like that fit better than Taylor Hall. And yeah, back to the trade deadline. Like, we were talking about those names, how we're not crazy excited. The question I ask myself is, like, could we get more excited if, like, Line A's traded again? Because that has not been a good fit at all. What if Johnny Gaudreau gets traded? He's a 2022 UFA, right? And Line A is a 2021 RFA. So, you know, less of a reason to trade Line A, I guess, other than the fact that it hasn't worked out. But Johnny Gaudreau, with how the Flames have tanked here the past couple of weeks under Daryl Sutter, that seems to be more of a reality, right, Robbie? That's been like in the cards for a while. People have been discussing and rumoring about Johnny Gaudreau playing somewhere else. It just didn't seem like a real reality until now. Now it seems almost inevitable before his contract runs out next year.
I mean, that team might be picking first overall in the summer here. I mean, that's how bad it's gotten. 2-8-0 in the past 10. They've got 5 more points than Ottawa, and they've played an additional game. So they're going to compete with Ottawa for that bottom spot all season long here. And it's just, Pete, yeah, I mean, Johnny Gaudreau, it's unfortunate because, you know, we saw him break out with the 90-plus points. We saw him look so good with Sean Monahan, and that was one of the best duos in fantasy alongside Giordano on the back end. And then it just evaporated so quickly. And I think with Gaudreau, I do get excited thinking about him in a change of scenery. Line A, you know, that one I'm a little bit less optimistic on, just because Columbus, I thought, would have been a pretty good fit for him to be the guy. But then you have to factor in John Tortorella, and you realize that it's hard to be the guy with John Tortorella behind the bench, maybe. So there's that factor too. But I think Gaudreau at the right team, the right fit, would be really exciting to me in fantasy, Pete. Like, that's a guy that could just light it up the rest of the season and help to win your championship. I like to think the same for Laine in terms of goal production, at least. But that one, I just struggle to see where he would really benefit going. Like, a team like the Florida Panthers would be great. A team like the Hurricanes would be great. But I think with their standings, it would be tough for them to make that move right now. Maybe something they could do at the draft, but not right now before the deadline.
For sure. And yeah, I think, like, with Line A, you look back to that trade, we were excited because it was a big trade early in the season, and you like to look at the positives and potential ways it could work out. But really, at the surface, when you look back in hindsight, it was like, Columbus is not an offensive team. They haven't been under Tortorella. And then the Tortorella factor, like, those were just two aspects of that move that, you know, it's pretty simple why it didn't work out, I would say. It's not like, you know, you don't have to be like a scientist to figure it out why it hasn't worked out for Patrick Laine in Columbus. But if he does go to a better team and has a playmaker around him, which I don't think he did in, you know, for the past few years at even strength in Winnipeg and even this time in Columbus. I mean, there's no elite center on that team. You saw flash in the pan from Roslovic, but it's just not enough. I mean, right. We dropped Roslovic the other day to pick somebody up in our league where we're, you know, trying to get that first place trophy in our Roto league. And you just don't want any exposure to Columbus. And the same was true last year, and their power play is no good for many years. So yeah, I do still think there is a glimmer for Patrick Laine to explode on the goal scoring front if he is moved to a better team. So, and yeah, Johnny Gaudreau, in terms of destinations, it's hard to really say it because I can't picture that guy in another jersey, but it's the reality. It's coming soon. So maybe not at the deadline, but maybe in the offseason, the Flames are going to have to shake this thing up here.
Well, two things that are notable for Columbus, at least, is they beat the Tampa Bay Lightning again. I can't believe that they have their number. It's just crazy dating back to that playoff series, it seems like. And then Jack Roslovic, look at his season stat line, 24 points in 33 games. You know, I mean, that's as much or more than you ever would have thought possible for that player. And the fact that he has been more relevant than Patrick Laine, Pete, really says it all to me. Another big game for Roslovic last night. Domi had a big one, multi-points for him. And it, like, I'd love, as you mentioned, I'd love to get excited about this right now and be optimistic for the rest of the season. But I think we're at that point now where we've kind of seen the full hand of cards. We've kind of seen it. Even with Dallas is another good example of this last night. The fact that they just can't rattle off a couple wins in a row, like, that's unfortunate. There's not much more to be positive about that, right? So, you know, I'd love to be the guy to make the shiny, you know, optimistic take here, but I'm not doing it with Columbus. And Seth Jones is really the only guy on my fantasy team, because it's a bangers league with the blocks too, that I've had any patience with from the Blue Jackets.
And the Predators really quietly are starting to emerge from that pack of teams. And, you know, they've dominated the Blackhawks lately on the head-to-head front. That's a big reason why they're there. And, you know, you mentioned the big win for Chicago, but they're kind of like Dallas these days. They'll give you one good performance and then two bad performances and get you, you know, thinking about them in a different light and come the next morning. So I think Nashville has been the most consistent team of that bunch so far. I don't love their like firepower, you know, to make the playoffs, but maybe it's going to be just that, like, they're a better version of Columbus, right? They're not going to blow you out of the water offensively, but they also have had a ton of games against Detroit. I know they had to rally in that game against Detroit. So that's their point total on the season has been boosted by already playing Detroit that number of times, whereas a lot of these other teams around them still have a ton of games to go against the Red Wings.
This is the perfect situation for Nashville to trade Ekholm for a forward. You know, trade Ekholm, get a young forward in there and someone that can score and help them be a little bit more exciting offensively. Like, we've seen Tolvanen take a massive step. I'm really, really excited for his future in fantasy, Pete. Like, next season, that could be a guy that is drafted outside the top 100 that returns major value. But right now, they need more of those type of players. And Ekholm would be the guy that can fetch you that piece. Now, he's a 2022 UFA, so there's really no point in them hanging on to him. I mean, if they do hang on to him, that's the last nail in the coffin for the Nashville Predators, as far as I'm concerned, for their future. You can't make too many more of those blunders around the trade deadline. I mean, we were talking about this yesterday. Matt Duchene, go back and look at the initial deal in which he was acquired. For, you know, that when the Colorado Avalanche dealt him, they ended up getting Sam Girard from a three-team trade from Nashville in the deal. Sam Girard is above and beyond the best player involved in that deal, and it's not even close.
Yeah. Yeah, Sam Girard's in the top 10 defenseman rankings that Robbie worked on yesterday. NHL.com/fantasy joins his teammate Cale Makar among the upper echelon at the position. And one other thing about Nashville too, I mean, they have some flexibility here. They're going to be getting Philip Forsberg back from injury right after the trade deadline, it sounds like. So that's, you're going to be getting an offensive boost there. You're going to be getting Victor Arvidsson hopefully back soon. He's day-to-day. I mean, those are two of your top three forwards, probably. Definitely two of your top three wings, along with Tolvanen. And yeah, I mean, how about go out there and get a return for Ekholm, something that can help you win now, and then also like a good pick for the future. I mean, that's something that that franchise really needs to integrate and fast. I don't see anybody really on their prospect radar or even young player radar outside of Tolvanen and, of course, Dante Fabbro, who's playing on the top pair with Roman Josi. Other than that, it's the same Statesman that will only get you to a certain point. We've seen their ceiling already, that core of the Predators. So you got to add some new wrinkles to it. And now is a chance to capitalize on Ekholm's value, which you can get a lot for a top pair defenseman at the trade deadline, I would say.
Oh, especially with how the league is being played right now, with so many overs being hit. I mean, a shutdown guy sounds so appealing. I mean, there's 10 teams you could throw out there that are looking for exactly that, Pete, especially teams that are on the fringe of a playoff spot too, that think that one more defenseman might be their ticket into the dance. Like, that could do it. And we could see, and that's the stuff I get excited about in fantasy. So that being said, I would definitely go and add an Ekholm right now. You know, if you can afford to stash, and even if you can't stash him, you know, just get him on in your starting lineup for the blocks, for the hits, for the shots, all that kind of stuff, even if he's not producing points. So that's an exciting one. PK Subban, I think I'm less excited about Pete. His career kind of seemed to go down, at least in fantasy, when he was acquired by the New Jersey Devils. Another one where I thought, you know, he would have been the guy. It just didn't work out that way. And so do you see any value in a guy like PK? He doesn't have a bad stat line points wise on the season, but I'm not seeing a whole lot there.
He would have to end up on an elite team and something along the lines of, you know, like Shattenkirk last year, where he ends up playing with an elite defenseman after a trade, or plays in a top four that's just fully loaded. Fantasy wise, I'm probably less likely to stash a Ristolainen or a PK Subban. You know, Ekholm's already rostered. I'm looking out there around the league, like at some options on the defenseman waiver wire that I really like. Like, right, we were talking about him yesterday. It's the tail end of your list, like Jared Spurgeon playing on power play one for the Minnesota Wild, and has 6 points in his past 8 games with 4 on the power play. I mean, and that's one of the single most trusted all around defensemen in the entire NHL. And he's out there just because he doesn't have good numbers on the season, but he's getting that expanded role. So sure, I think PK Subban could up his production a little bit with a change of scenery to a better team. Same for Ristolainen, but with the potential quarantines and, you know, just the shelf life on players like that for fantasy. And we got the playoffs coming up in some leagues as early as next week. So my leagues, I think, are 2 weeks from now, but some people can't have time to waste, you know, hoping to pick up PK Subban, and then they have to activate him because, you know, he's no longer IR plus eligible or whatever. And then you end up wasting a roster spot or wasting a move just to replace him. So I would kind of just throw those guys on your watch list, Subban and Ristolainen, and just see where they go. If you really love the spot, then pull the trigger and add them. But if not, just sit back and kind of observe the situation as they hopefully go to better places at the deadline.
I would say fringe watch list is James Reimer of the Carolina Hurricanes. He's totally fallen out of favor there in their goalie rotation. Now, 3 of his past 4 outings, he's played below a .900 save percentage, and that brings him down to a .905 total on the season. So the wheels have kind of fallen off that bus for Reimer. And I'm just not, that's another player I'm not super excited about a change of scenery, because 2 things. 1, his stat line is not good enough. 2, he's going to be probably a 3 guy, you know, taxi squad up and down type of player that is going to get you a start maybe once a week, and barring an injury, of course, to the team's number one starter. So that one, you know, I would like to do for spot starts for Reimer, but I cannot recommend going out and picking this guy up, because Nedeljkovic, clear cut and away, has solidified himself as their number 2 goalie. And then Mrazek's been sensational since returning. Didn't skip a beat with the thumb injury, Pete. 944 save percentage against the Florida Panthers on Tuesday night.
And Mrazek was not even holding a stick for a while when we were saying, oh, he's getting closer. Like, they were still saying, you know, because it was a thumb injury, like, he had to be gentle with it. So, and he's picking it up. Like, he had the AHL start, was a home run. with the high save volume. And then now two starts in, two wins, only two goals allowed. He had that other shutout. So, and he beat two quality teams. I mean, right? That was the Panthers' first loss in a while. So Mrazek has been good for the Panthers, for the Hurricanes in the playoffs the past 2 years. I don't think he's been the reason that they've exited in either of those seasons. You know, some of their scoring has dried up at different times, and they were just too young of a team at different points. And last year, like, Svechnikov went down, and that was just a backbreaker for that team. But, you know, do they trust Mrazek? There's more, it's much more likely that they'll re-sign Peter Mrazek. It may seem obvious than James Reimer. They're both 2021 UFAs, so their contracts are coming off the books. But I think Mrazek has a special energy for that team. I think they'll probably try to bring him back and team him with Nedeljkovic and maybe usher in that new era over the next 2 or 3 years. But, you know, Nedeljkovic is the real deal. They're not going to squeeze him out and put him back on the taxi squad. He's one of the best rookie goalies in the league. Honestly, one of the best rookie goalies in recent memory, recent seasons, the way that he's playing. And the other thing about Reimer is he's got a deep defense in Carolina. They're a top five team in the NHL. If he's not going to give you good peripherals for that team, maybe he won't give you good peripherals for another team either, especially of lesser quality out there.
Well, the Hurricanes are going to be interesting in the offseason because Dougie Hamilton is coming up on his first year of being a UFA. That is ridiculous, Pete. Like, he's playing as a $10 million plus player annually. So what is going to be left over for Mrazek, who's also playing like he's worth at least $7 million? I don't know how they're going to fit those under the books unless they play without a third and fourth line next season. So I just, you know, it's unlikely that I think Mrazek even almost comes back there because of that situation, unless they're, you know, unless they got a little bit crazy with the cap and find loopholes and, you know, have someone big taken in the expansion draft, like a Jordan Staal or something, but he's got a no move clause. So I don't know. That's going to be a good situation. That being said, though, if they do find a way to get Mrazek back there, Pete, Mrazek and Ned is going to be the best goalie duo in fantasy.
Well, it's a good problem to have that they've had these young players emerge at these key positions. Like you said on a previous show, if Teravainen's expendable and now has an injury concern, like if he's either, you know, you don't, hopefully he's healthy and stuff like that, but like he's expendable. They have no pressure to bring back Mrazek or Reimer at this point. Hamilton is the key guy that, like, you're going to want to spend up to keep if at all possible. And even if you don't keep Dougie Hamilton, if you can't keep him, he gets more money elsewhere, you can't fit him into the cap, it's unfortunate, but who has a better wealth of riches as far as their defenseman prospect pool than the Hurricanes? You could probably see Jake Bean or something become a Dougie Hamilton caliber player, or Brett Pesce years down the road. You know, these are guys that are in secondary roles and they still have Slavin. So I think maybe only Colorado has a better defenseman pool, all things considered, than the Hurricanes. So again, all these key positions, and even Nietzsche's, like we talked about him, like they don't even need Teravainen anymore. They have their guy that could play on the top line and first power play. So all the things, all the concerns we said, even if they lose everybody in the offseason, they're still going to be in the hunt for the whole thing next year, I think.
That's actually true. I mean, it would be shocking if they lost Hamilton. You know, I'll push back a little bit there, because I think that's a player that nobody, Jake Bean's not even going to sniff being a guy like Dougie Hamilton. I mean, Dougie Hamilton is a double digit goal guy now for how many years in a row? Since 2014-15. I can't believe he was a member of the Calgary Flames and that didn't work out there. And now he goes to Carolina and had 14 goals in 47 games last year. Pete, do you remember how good he was through like January 1st before he got injured?
Yeah.
I remember Davey had to drop him. I'll never forget this in fantasy. Davey, goalie master Satriano, had to drop Dougie Hamilton on one team because it was a week-to-week start. He couldn't make it work with Hamilton. I picked him up, and he got me back in the playoff hunt on that alone. So Dougie Hamilton, you just can't find these players. But yeah, it's unfortunate because he's going to command such a huge payday that, yeah, his future in Carolina might be in question, no doubt.
Well, we were talking about goalies and potential destinations. Like, one team that has plenty of goalies, but the problem is two of them are injured, is the Coyotes. Like, right there, they're another team on the third stringer, Aiden Hill Kemper is dynamite when he's healthy, but he's not. Antti Raanta's rarely healthy at this stage of his career, unfortunately, for one thing or another with the injuries. But like, is that a team, because they have some cushion now that the Sharks lost? They're about 5 points ahead of the Sharks and same number of games played, I think. And the Blues too, they got some cushion on the Blues, but is Aiden Hill going to take them to the playoffs? I have my doubts. So I guess a lot of it would come down to how long of an injury this thing is with Kemper. But like, are the Coyotes buyers at the deadline? Are they in the market for a fourth goalie just to try to get by here? Who knows, right?
I think they should be, Pete. I mean, I don't know if they're, you know, their ownership feels that way, but I really believe that that team can compete. I mean, the reason why, too, the argument is written in the other teams in that division. St. Louis, who gets back Colton Parayko, literally like a miracle on Monday or whatever it was, you know, 30 minutes before puck drop, I tweet out just what they needed. They get blown out 6-1. Parayko makes zero impact. You know, if that doesn't get you going, I don't know what will with the St. Louis Blues, Pete. So there's that. And then San Jose losing to Anaheim, that's over with, nail in the coffin. LA doesn't have the horses. Their coach even came out yesterday and said it's over. And then Anaheim, I mean, they sent down Trevor Zegras to learn how to be a center. Did I read that statement correctly?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they're playing David Backes over Trevor Zegras. It's not the way that I would do things. If I was making that call, I would try to get Trevor Zegras up to speed, of course. But, you know, everybody has their reasons for different things. Yeah, the Ducks have played spoiler a couple of times. They swept the St. Louis Blues that one weekend. The Blue, yeah, I mean, Parayko, we were excited about that when we heard that news about 7:30 Eastern that one night. And he's out there, you activate him, and then he's -3. I mean, the Blues got some serious problems this year. It's not just something that's going to, you know, come out of thin air and solve that team. I mean, they have the talent. They should be higher than the Coyotes in the standings, but they're not. And they haven't been nearly as consistent over the past month, month and a half of the season. So, yeah, a lot of concerns with the Blues. The Coyotes, big storyline. This kid came out of nowhere, right? This Michael Bunting. He's played 4 games, played a couple of games in a previous season, but pretty young. He's like 25, hidden gem, wasn't drafted high. He's coming in here, and he had a multi-point game in his first game of the season, then 2 goose eggs, but then a hat trick on Monday for the Yotes. So is this a guy that you consider adding in fantasy just because the Coyotes have some offensive appeal? Because he's playing on the top line with Connor Garland, right? And Nick Schmaltz, 2 guys we've been talking a lot about this year.
Well, Connor Garland came out of the woodwork too a few years ago, right? And then stuck around and was fantasy relevant. And now he's a great streaming option in fantasy. He's got 30 points in 38 games this year, right? So I would say Michael Bunting has staying power. Nick Schmaltz has been another guy who's playing on the top line with them that has just stayed fantasy relevant. You know, he will have a couple goose eggs here and there, but overall, I really like the appeal of their top six, because now they have the second line with Dvorak, Kessel, and then Keller on the left side. And you look at that line with some excitement and some intrigue. So all they need to do is keep Bunting on that top line, get a couple goals every few games from him, and they're going to have 2 lines that are going to return value for you in fantasy.
He's got a good shot volume too. Through 4 games, he's got 13 shots on goal. So maybe if he keeps that up, he'll see a little bit more power play time. The Coyotes actually have 2 decent power play units. I mean, maybe they're not going to wow you in terms of their overall percentage on the season, but you got one unit with Chychrun, another with Ekman-Larsson. You got, you know, one with Kessel and Keller, the other with Schmaltz and Dvorak and Garland, and now maybe add Bunting to the mix as well. So it's they got some sneaky guys. We always use that word for the Coyotes, sneaky, sneaky. They're fantasy relevant. They got 3 guys in our top 100 forwards with Kessel, Keller, and Garland, who's been there all year. And then Bunting's in the just missed. And they got 2 guys in the defenseman rankings, right? Like Chychrun's now top 20 at the defenseman position and deserves to be. I was glad to see him in that realm for your rankings this week. And it's just about the goalie for that team. That, I mean, I don't see them pulling an upset against the Avalanche or the Golden Knights, but you know, it's good for that franchise with, you know, having to lose Taylor Hall to free agency. It didn't work out. And the John Chayka thing last year was kind of a disaster with how it fell out. So, you know, good to at least see that team show some resiliency, be competitive, play above their heads a little bit, and now get some surprise stories to boot. It's good stuff.
Well, and Bunting had 19 points in the AHL in 16 games prior to getting called up for the Tucson Roadrunners, who are the Buffalo Sabres of the AHL. So that is really impressive. Like, nobody else on the team was doing anything, and Bunting was lighting it up every night. So there's definitely some appeal there. Deeper league or even shallow, I would stream him. I do think to feel safe about it, they probably do need a goalie, right? Because every time I recommend picking up Antti Raanta, he goes on IR the following day. So that's the only concern there. But I do think, Pete, Arizona's the team that's looking like they're going to get into the playoffs here.
Now, talking about injuries, since we last talked, a big set of blows to the Montreal Canadiens, right? Like Brendan Gallagher out indefinitely, and Carey Price, I guess, has been dealing with some lingering injury, and he's now day-to-day. So how do you look at the Montreal Canadiens going into the trade deadline? Or do they just maybe do, you know, addition from the interior and bring up Cole Caulfield a little bit sooner than expected? They also have Caden Primo, who's a pretty good prospect to fill in, and Jake Allen's a quality backup, and they got a strong defense. They got a deep lineup, so it's just a matter of plugging and playing. But I think they might have the pieces in the interior. They won't have to go outside. What do you think, Rob?
Yeah, they just don't have the salary to go outside either. They've only got $400,000 available. So unless they could get real creative, I'm not seeing a big name go in there. That said, I mean, I guess they could move a roster player out, but I don't see that, Pete. I think the inside is the way to go. I think Cole Caulfield, they probably didn't want to burn a year off his ELC, but I think they're going to have to now with Gallagher out, and he's the perfect replacement player. Same position, goal scoring ability, and Gallagher's goal totals were down this year. So if you get a guy on the right side that can score consistently, like Caulfield probably can, I think you're going to see something good here. Now, does this make him a must-add in fantasy? Close to it. I mean, you have to play the news. You have to play the speculation, because if it's announced, Pete, that he's in the lineup, let's say it's over this weekend, it's going to be too late. He's already going to be off the waiver wire. So I would pick him up there. Now, Eric Staal, credit to him, he scored the OT winner against the Edmonton Oilers. And all I could think about when I watched that happen, I was like, this Bell Center would have erupted had they had fans there. Like, it would have been crazy. It would have been like Ilya Kovalchuk last year, you know, when he scored an OT winner, just absolute madness. And Eric Staal is another guy I think that could help them down the stretch here. So that was a good move by Bergevin, just kind of pad where they need a little bit of an extra boost. And I think they need the same thing on the right side. Now, hopefully it's Caulfield that gets the shot.
And don't be surprised if I was talking about how the Buffalo Sabres guys will return value around the league, I think, after the trade deadline. Staal's included in that mix was just had good shot volume, actually. You know, that was his debut with the Canadiens, but I think he has, over his past six games, 20 shots on goal, which is pretty darn good, especially for a veteran player. The guy can still play. He just like wasn't, couldn't buy a bucket there for the whole season in Buffalo and didn't have much help around him, but has a good lineup placement now with Jonathan Drouin and Tyler Toffoli, who's back from injury. Of course, Toffoli's close to 20 goals on the season now, so he's been a stud. They're lucky they picked him up, because without Gallagher, you're going to need some support, no doubt. Thomas Tatar, good in-house fantasy replacement, playing on the third line right now with Deneau and Kokaniemi. But, you know, he's been productive lately. You see Josh Anderson's a must-own fantasy player. I mean, and Caulfield, we have him stashed in the one league. So if you're reluctant and saying, you know, hey, Pete and Rob are doing it, so, you know, get on board, you know, stay ahead of the curve. Pick the guy up. He was a beast in college. I've been excited to watch this guy for a few years. You didn't know if he was going to go to Montreal, but he did. So that's a positive thing for sure. And, you know, I think he could be fantasy relevant right from the get-go. And Eric Staal, yeah, I mean, he's a decent option if you're in a deep league too. I know he's center only, so that doesn't do you any favors. But yeah, Eric Staal is going to be productive with the Canadiens as long as he's playing with Tyler Toffoli. I mean, Toffoli's not letting up at all. You know, even he was only injured. That's why his production dipped. So now he's back. Staal's going to get a bunch of assists this year playing with Toffoli.
And his splits against Toronto are amazing. So get him in the DFS lineup on Wednesday night. 51 points in 49 career games against the Maple Leafs. So that is a lineup lock. Now, I don't love the Habs in fantasy just because there are a lot of cooks in the kitchen. So I think Caulfield's the guy that you want to add and stick with him. I wouldn't go much more beyond that. I do like this team a lot, though, in real hockey here, Pete, because of their depth, because of their defense. The price situation would concern me more. Now, granted, this has happened a lot over the past few years where Price has had a nagging injury. So that would concern me more if they did not bring in Jake Allen, but they had the foresight to do this. The only thing that's a little bit murky about the Price situation is the fact that they knew he was injured in their game against Edmonton, but kept him in there anyway. I just don't understand necessarily why you would do that, why you would risk going beyond that, knowing Price's injury history. So if it does come down to him missing extended time, remember this exact same situation happened. I don't remember if it was last year. I think it was the year prior to that. I just don't know if they have the mental fortitude to overcome Carey, the guy being out. Like, that would be a big blow. So I hope it's nothing serious. Again, we'll find out more, I'm sure, as the week goes along here and what they do with the trade deadline. But let's just hope for their sake, because I really do think that's the perfect team to upset a team like Toronto or Winnipeg in round one if everybody's good to go.
And yeah, that's what I was referring to when I was saying, like, if a Sabre becomes a difference maker, like Eric Staal, if he's playing in the top six, he was productive last postseason for the Wild, had a good season in the regular season last year. So the guy can produce. He has produced recently beyond just this miserable season in Buffalo, but he is one of the guys that will go up against the names in Toronto, right? The Simmons and the Spezza, like, those are key guys for Toronto's long playoff run, key depth guys. Eric Staal would be the guy to not only be a depth player, but also, you know, give them a little bit of a jolt, especially if Caulfield's in the mix as well. I mean, those are the two guys that could, you know, provide different aspects that could help them spring an upset. So yeah, I like it for sure. And Staal, of course, cup winner from early in his career, and has that experience and has that vigor that he wants to, you know, he doesn't want to just retire without any more playoff success. So yeah, I like that for sure. I think that's something to monitor. Whoever gets that top seed in the North Division is going to be playing a feisty Montreal team. And I'm with you about what you said about Montreal can afford to go on like a 5 or 6 game losing streak right now with the teams behind them, you know, with the cushion that they have. So, you know, hopefully it doesn't bite them that they played Carey Price during his injury period.
That said, though, that one of the teams below them, the Vancouver Canucks, I am a little bit concerned about, definitely thinking about them in a tough time. But in fantasy, I've had a couple of questions on Twitter. What do I do with some of these guys? My advice is, if you have a Quinn Hughes who's at a valuable position, you hang on to him. Brock Besser, right wing, maybe two, who's been really, really solid this season. Beyond that, I think you probably cut the cord and get some of these guys in there. And even if you have a Hughes and a Besser and you're fighting for a playoff spot, you'll need to cut the cord and get someone in that can play right now.
For sure. It all depends if you're able to stash the guys on, you know, IR or IR plus because they're out with the COVID protocol and everything like that. And yeah, it's a tough situation, you know, wishing them the best up there in Vancouver, no doubt. But yeah, for fantasy playoffs and stuff, it's, you know, you go with the guys that can produce for you here and now. They don't know if, you know, if they're going to make up the games afterwards or not. Like, at this stage, we just don't know. So if your playoffs end before that, you just, you know, Quinn Hughes has been a little disappointing anyway for fantasy purposes. And JT Miller even was off the top line. So it's just, you know, you go in a different direction, I think, for fantasy purposes. And then back to Gallagher I was just going to ask you about, like, outside replacements. I'm looking at some of these names, like Frank Vetrano has been really good for the Panthers, left wing, right wing eligible, even is valuable when he's in the top nine, doesn't need to be on the top line. He's 104th in Yahoo's season long ranking. So he's got some decent category coverage as well. Jordan Eberle's a right wing, plays with Barzell, maybe could get a boost if they trade for a left wing at the trade deadline. We'll see. That's somebody that's out there in a lot of leagues, I would say. You know, looking at the rest of the list, I would generally avoid three teams out there. They've been falling in our rankings, right? St. Louis Blues, Calgary Flames, and Philadelphia Flyers. Those are not teams that I would want to have any players on my roster, maybe other than like Ivan Provorov or a Tarasenko, or, you know, there are only a select number of players. If you're looking at fringe guys from those teams, I would go in a different direction. That's just how it's been trending the past 2 or 3 weeks in fantasy. Those three teams have fallen off the grid a little bit.
I would say I'll add four names to that short list. I agree with Vetrano, certainly a guy I would pick up. Even if their schedule gets a little harder, he covers categories, so you don't need to worry about the production drop off as much with him. The four guys I like the most are Craig Smith of the Boston Bruins, picked up another assist against Philly in 3 shots in 15 minutes. That'll get it done. Donskoy of the Avs, who has been rostered. Now he's gone 3 games without a point. So you look at that, you might be a little concerned, but you could go Burakovsky instead, who's starting to heat up again now late in the season. Thomas Tatar for the Habs. There you go. In-house, he'll probably start playing bigger minutes. Had a goal against the Edmonton Oilers. And then Cale Yarncroc. I'm surprised that he's kept this thing up, Pete. He had 6 shots and an assist against the Detroit Red Wings in their shootout victory. So I think that's another one that's going to at least put a Band-Aid on and get you through a week or two with Gallagher out.
And I wonder, too, if I know he's the left wing slash center. So if you're looking for a right wing to replace Gallagher, but sometimes you're heavy on a position and you can afford to go to the other wing. Like, look at Alex Galchenyuk. I'm curious what he's going to do against his former team tonight. I think it's a big spot for him. And it's a good DFS trend because he's playing with John Tavares, who's had a couple of big games in a row, and also Willie Nylander. So, yeah, it's good lineup placement for him. It's a chance for him to kind of resurrect his career from a fantasy relevance standpoint, speaking of Galchenyuk. And I think he's also out there for, a potential replacement. If you want to go to a division leader, a guy who's playing in the top six, I know he just got there. He's got like 4 points in 9 games since the trade. But obviously has had a rocky career the past couple of years bouncing around the league. But I think that it's a chance for Galchenyuk, you know, to at least make the most of this time he has before he hits the UFA market again and, you know, maybe boost his stock a little bit. There's a lot on the table for a lot of those guys in Toronto, whether it's the star players need to prove that they're worth the money, the middle range players, the veteran guys want to try to win the cup for the first time, whether it's Spezza, Thornton, Simmons, and then throw Galchenyuk into that picture because he has been a colossal disappointment in his career, but has a chance to turn things around here in Toronto for a good team.
And I'm really impressed that Sheldon Keefe has kept him with that same line, Pete, since he got there. That's a stamp of approval on a good hockey coach that's going to trust a young player to kind of find his game and give him the right opportunity to do so. So I like that pickup. Definitely in deeper leagues, I would take a shot on Galley. And in DFS, he's a great way to get some top dollar exposure and save some money doing it. So let's talk about the Wednesday night slate. Now, I did want to say, I'm not going to go back to the sledge here. When you lose a sledge against the Philadelphia Flyers, you don't go back the next program. You can't do it. So I'll be the first one to tip my cap to the Flyers. That said, they roll hard out the next time. He has an 880 save percentage. So all is well that ends well. All is back to normal, but I am not going back to the sledgehammer.
Yeah, I know. The next night they hit the puck line, and I was talking about them as part of the parlay on the puck line. That's a weird thing about like the hockey betting this year. Like sometimes a crazy thing happens, but then on that second night, you can go with your initial idea, right? It worked out for if you were, you know, thinking about what Bobby picked the Sabres the one day and they barely lost, and then the next night they won. So it's like that's a trend that's happening a lot recently that you should take notice of. And maybe even just sit the first game out. If you know that two teams are playing each other twice that week, sit the first game out, see what happens, see what disappointed you, and then kind of roll it the second time. And then this way you're not on the losing end the first time and you could be more reactionary because this is a very reactionary season for hockey, I would say.
So what you're saying is I should take a sledge on the Blues tonight then in their second against the Golden Knights.
I wouldn't go that far. I can't trust the Blues right now, especially against an elite team. So I would fade the Blues. Plus 130 is decent value. I would have hoped it would be a little higher just because the Blues haven't won. I don't even remember the last time the Blues have won a game at this point. I'm a little more interested maybe in the Wild plus 160 against the Avs. I know the Avs are loaded, but let's see who they start. If it's Johansson, maybe they have a chance. The Wild came back in that game. They were getting blown out, and they came back and made it a one-goal game. So Minnesota is not afraid of anybody. Fiala kept it going. I mentioned Spurgeon. I would go out there and add Spurgeon as a fourth or bench defenseman, even if you're in a more shallow league. I have a lot of trust in that player. So, yeah, I'm not throwing a sledge on the Wild, but I think there's more appeal on the Wild to beat the Avalanche than there is on the Blues to beat the Golden Knights. And then, yeah, we were talking about this a little bit, Robbie, right? Like, probably ride the hot hand. Like, how are the Coyotes underdogs against, other than just the bounce back appeal, how are the Coyotes underdogs against the Kings? Something, the rug has gotten pulled out from under the Kings, and now they've fallen off a cliff, right? Like, we're disappointed by this team. I know they're early on in the rebuild, but they still got their star players. They still got the championship core. I think I expected more. They kind of peaked at the wrong time earlier in the year, but I would be all over the Coyotes, even with Adin Hill, against those LA Kings who have really fallen off.
Yep, there's three dogs I like tonight. Arizona's one of them. I love that matchup for them. I like the Blues. I really do. At plus 130, I would take that. And I think the Canadians have some appeal too, you know, with Jake Allen going against the Maple Leafs. That's going to be a tight game. You just know it. So I like those three dogs. I would love to pull out the sledge. Maybe I will on Twitter later. Watch out for that. But right now, I'm not caffeinated enough to get up and get going for the St. Louis Blues here.
Yeah, that's a watch game for it. It's hard, always hard for me to make a pick for Canadians and Maple Leafs, but especially with the injury storylines, you know, they're not going to have Caulfield yet, but of course they do have Staal, they do have Allen, they do have a deep roster. So that's going to be an epic clash for sure. Maybe expect some goals in that game. I mean, and there's not much value on the over or the under in that game, but you know, just from a storyline standpoint, I'd like to see those teams trade chances, go back and forth. How about can somebody out there beat Jack Campbell, right? The guy's 9-0-0 in his career, or in his, to start the season for the Maple Leafs. And we talked about him early on with waiver wire James and how there was an opportunity for him to run away with this thing while Freddie Anderson was injured. Do you think that like Jack Campbell's going to be playing game one for them in the playoffs at this rate? I mean, he certainly has a chance, even if Freddie comes back.
Every day, every win is looking more and more like the answer to that question is yes. I would have pushed back on that. I did 2 weeks ago on the program when James brought it up as a legit possibility. I kind of pushed that aside, but it's true. And I do think it's trending that way if he keeps it up. Now, in fantasy, I should have made that move 2 weeks ago when James recommended it, where I should have dropped Kaapo Kakkonen for Jack Campbell, and I refuse to do that. And now I'm just hoping that Kakkonen gets one of these starts, Pete, and it doesn't look like he's going to if Talbot keeps this thing up. So that's where you really have to be a little bit shrewd in fantasy, you know, ride the hot hand, especially at this time of year.
So there's actually a league that I'm in. It's a shallow league. I think it's an 8 or 10 team league, but check out my goalies here. So I drafted the Vegas tandem. I had Freddie Anderson. He's on my IR plus. I picked up Jack Campbell, and then I activated Peter Mrazek. So I got 5 goalies on the roster. One is on IR plus, so I'm rolling with 4. The Vegas tandem, which I love. Peter Mrazek has been outstanding since coming back, and Jack Campbell hasn't lost a game. So, and I only picked him up like maybe a couple of days ago. He was like still out there, so he might still be out there. Probably not if you're in a competitive league, but crazy stuff going on with the Maple Leafs, and you never know if a guy like that is like doesn't have as much pressure on him and has the confidence going on his end. Like, you never know. He might be the guy that, like, as much as I like Freddie Anderson personally, like, I want to see him do well as a Danish player. But like, I think like Jack Campbell might have a little more to give and a little less worries and past history haunting him and stuff like that, you know?
Well, you're looking at, a wealth of riches, an embarrassment of riches with your goaltender position. And I'm looking at picking up Linus Ullmark today on the waiver wire. So a tale of two fantasy seasons on the program today. Any final thoughts, Petey, before we're back at it on Friday?
Well, I mean, we'll probably have at least one trade to break down, right? Before, you know, next time we talk, but yeah, we'll see. We'll see who we can get on. We got to talk to a couple of guys out there. Love to talk to Nick Alberga. Love to talk to Michael Leboff. We'll get somebody good for you on Friday. Maybe even a little Chris Wassel. So we're excited about the show there. We also have, of course, next week we'll probably move around the show. We don't usually do the Monday morning show when the deadline is just hours away. So the deadline, Monday, April 12th at 3 p.m. will be a lot of activity. It'll be a little bit different. But one other thing I was thinking yesterday when I was doing a segment is that there's going to be some value. There's always value on teammates affected by the trades. There's going to be some value this year if there are quarantines on players, teammates affected by the trades in the interim, in that like week and a half span where guys are going to be bumped up to power play one because some of their teammate just got traded, or guys going to be on the top line a la Andrew Kopp, right? Like when Dubois didn't join the team. I think that was a perfect example. And he's parlayed it to the rest of the season. Andrew Kopp still worth rostering even when he plays on the third line. So that's just like a little creative thinking, I guess, based on what happened with that trade earlier that I'm also looking forward to breaking down with you once these guys start moving and we see the dust settle.
Yep, I'm right there with you. I'm actually thinking about picking up Kopp too, so that's another one. Hopefully nice. He can save my fantasy season. Until we talk again though, Friday, great show today. For Pete Jensen at NHL Jensen, I'm Rob Reese at NHL Reese. Hit us up on Twitter and Instagram at NHL Fantasy, and we will talk to you again shortly.